right. Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Okay, go ahead and get started out of respect for everybody's time. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. My name is Michael Spaeth. I'm a principal planner with the town of Oral Valley, and I'm going to be facilitating tonight's meeting. Sorry, one sec. Hear myself echoing. I'm going to be facilitating tonight's meeting. Thank you for joining us on a Monday night for the first neighborhood meeting for the proposed subdivision east of the Sanctuary at Silverhawk subdivision down here, just down the street. Got a pretty good crowd with us here. We've also got a few folks online. So when we get to the question and answer period, I appreciate your patience as we go bouncing back and forth between questions in the room and folks online there to be able to get as many questions answered as possible. As facilitator, I am neutral. We do have a town staff who's going to be presenting this evening, who's the primary town reviewer for the project when we get a formal submittal. But my role is to just have a fair and efficient meeting this evening. I want to make sure everybody has an opportunity to make their voice heard. If you've got questions, comments, concerns, any opinions, it's great. That's what we're here to find out and listen to. Let's see. I do need everyone's help. Hopefully you grabbed the ground rules handout on the way in. If not, that's okay. It's also on the screens behind me. Don't need to read each and every one of those, but essentially what it boils down to is just please be respectful. Be respectful of staff, of the applicant, and then, of course, your fellow neighbors here this evening, again, with the aim of trying to have as productive of a conversation as possible. So just some quick ground rules. If you haven't been to Town Hall before, we do have some restrooms and water out the doors that you came in, so feel free to use those anytime you need to. If you've got a cell phone, if you could please mute those out of respect for folks here in the room, and I'll double check that I did that too. I did. For the folks on Zoom, you'll notice that your mics are turned off for the moment. When we get to the question and answer period, we'll give you some instructions on how to turn those on and be able to ask questions should you have any. Can I see a show of hands of folks who got a yellow postcard for tonight's meeting? Okay, so pretty good, just about all of you. So that means that you're already on our notification list. If you didn't get one and you would like to be notified of all the future meetings related to this project, please make sure that you signed in or signed in on your way out, either way. That'll make sure that you're added to our list for all upcoming meetings down the road. OV Projects is a resource I would like to point you to. It's literally www.ovprojects.com. If you got that little yellow postcard, it was referenced on there. That's a resource the town uses to upload revised information as we get it so that you guys can stay as informed and up to date on the project as much as possible. We don't have a formal submittal from the applicant yet, but when we do, that's where we'll post it so you folks can go review those at your leisure. We are scheduled to go to 7:30 this evening. If we still have some outstanding questions after that, I know the applicant and staff are more than willing to hang out afterwards and try and address as many questions as you may have. And then lastly, we've got a poster board over here, but there were handouts at the table too. We do ask that when you guys are done, you don't have to do it immediately, but take a survey for us. We're trying to gauge whether the neighborhood meeting process that we're providing to neighbors is as effective as we hope it to be. So we ask that you just take 2 minutes and provide some quick feedback on that. So I'd like to just quickly start by, this is the property owner's request that we're here discussing tonight, so I do want to draw that distinction. It's not the town's request. We, when we do get a formal submittal, are required to provide due process of reviewing that application, but it is the applicant's charge to create, seek, and justify why they think their proposal should be approved. So we're going to go through the process here. Hopefully everybody leaves this meeting with a firm understanding of what the process is. If you have questions, that's great. Just ask that if you could hold those until the presentations are done, because I'm willing to bet that there are a lot of questions that will be answered as part of our presentation. So with that, we'll go ahead and get started. I do have a quick plug too. So if folks aren't familiar with our town general plan, that's a document that gets updated every 10 years. It's very public outreach heavy, and we need participation and want to get as much participation as possible from everybody in town A lot of the topics that we're going to discuss tonight, I'm sure, are covered in the general plan in terms of what the town wants to see moving forward over the next 10 years. So just wanted to provide a quick plug for that. So if you're interested in having your voice heard outside of just this conversation tonight, please go to www.ovpathforward.com and you can find out more information about that. So where are we in the process? Hopefully those of you that got the postcard were able to go to ovprojects.com and view the informational video that was put up there with the aim of trying to get as much information out in advance of tonight's meeting as possible. If you haven't, feel free to go back and look at that when you have time. But of course, we're here at the first neighborhood meeting. As I stated, we do not have a formal submittal from the applicant, but we do anticipate one soon. When that comes in, again, we'll upload that to OV Projects so everybody can look at it. Staff will then go back and forth with the applicant on their design for code compliance and code conformance. And then when that's done, we will have a second neighborhood meeting where we'll bring you all back together and give the applicant an opportunity to show you any revisions they have made to the plans to try and address any of the questions or concerns that we're hearing tonight. Both of these applications that Ms. Chavez will talk about do require consideration by the Planning and Zoning Commission and Town Council, which are also opportunities for public input and public involvement. So please stay attuned with this process as it moves forward. So just quickly, I'm gonna ask Ms. Chavez to do a brief overview of the applicant's proposal and a little bit of background information to kind of set the stage for our conversation. Then we're going to turn it over to Mr. Gary Grizzle, who is representing the property owner, to do a presentation of their own. And then, like I said, the most important part is to turn it over to you folks and have that conversation with you. And then ultimately, we'll finish with some next steps. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Chavez.
Thank you all for your time tonight and this evening. My name is Alex Chavez. I'm the planner that will be reviewing this project. So getting some context as to where the location is, if you're not familiar, it is about a half mile northeast of First Avenue in Naranja. So we have it outlined here in the subject property. You can see that it is situated by three subdivisions, Sanctuary at Silverhawk, which is outlined in blue, Palisade South in orange, and Palisade Point in purple. Access to First Avenue is through Sanctuary at Silverhawk through the entrance there. So some background for the site here. The access to this property is through a legal access easement that was established between Meritage and the property owners prior during the development of the Silverhawk and Sanctuary final plat. So you can see that when you look at it, it's a common area C, and it's denoted as a private street. So in regards to the zoning, currently it is zoned R6, which is multifamily residential. That encompasses not just multifamily, but also single family residential, professional offices. So there's a few allowances that are in that. One thing to note, while the site is vacant, it's not open space. That's a separate zoning designation. So so there are development rights that are associated with the property. Additionally, the general plan, Your Voice, Our Future, denotes this area for residential use as well. So there's some planning into what will occur with the property. In terms of the characteristics of the site, we do have some, the topography of the site has some sloping around the perimeter of the site. We also have, we can see here in the aerial on the site, there's been some disturbances throughout the years, and you can kind of see that where it's, there's some pathways kind of created there. So why we're here, giving some context in terms of the planning aspect to it. So the applicant has two requests. They're separate but related. The first that we'll talk about is a grading exception. So a grading exception essentially is a request to either remove or add dirt land on the site more than what the zoning allowances allow. This helps stabilize the landscape to provide site, a site for construction. This is a discretionary ask. It goes beyond what the property rights are, so it goes through that process. So the discretionary ask is in addition to the property rights and the entitlements, and so it goes through the review process and needs town council approval. Essentially, so when the zoning, the grading zoning goes through in effect, what happens is the applicant will look at the site and identify areas that need to, that exceed that grading allowance. And so essentially it creates a sort of heat map on the site. So here, the applicant's proposal's on the site, and it's in the handout. And so you can see they've taking advantage of open space where the topography is a bit of a challenge, but they'll still need some grading exception. So the next item that we have for their request is the preliminary plat. So this is the design of the subdivision, what it looks like. In this approval process, the packet would include plans for recreational areas, landscape plans, and they'll also need to do cultural resource inventory. So there's pieces in that. So for the preliminary plat, the subdivision that the owner is proposing, it's within the property's owner's entitlement and legal rights to develop the property to R6 standards. The town can't remove these rights, nor can they remove the easement access for the property. So essentially, these are we're framing the asks in this context. In the sense that we're still in the preliminary stages of this project. And so we're looking at, so what's happening is it's an introduction to this project. It's an opportunity to get your feedback, hear your concerns, and then the applicant will go back and modify or see how they can adjust the plans to fit the concerns you all may have. So Mike may have touched on this, but this is the most important opportunity where you can effectuate change in the stages of public input for the project before they submit a formal submittal. So Mr. Grizzle will go into detail into what the applicant's proposal are, but what we have here on the screen are the development standards for R6, so essentially the parameters that the project must address. So what's important to note here are some of the what's associated with R6. The building height has a limitation of 25 feet or 2 stories. We also have the allowable density for this site, which would be 119 homes for the size of this acreage. Again, the applicant is proposing 19 homes. So just kind of give framing what's allowed within the zoning district standards. And then additionally, it's the allowable uses. We kind of touched on those, multifamily, professional services, professional offices. But the applicant is seeking a single family detached subdivision. So once we, there we go. So once we get a formal submittal from the applicant, town staff, planning and zoning, and town council will review the plans. The review that we'll receive will go through we'll go through our zoning compliance to ensure that they're adhering to the building standards, the subdivision layout, also to conformance with roadway designs to ensure that it's compatible with wildlife. So there's quite a few elements that they'll be reviewed for. Drainage is another that our engineering team will look at. So it does have to go still through the whole process. And then our design standards for subdivisions. So going through that, once we receive all the formal submittal, it's been reviewed, then again, we'll have the second neighborhood meeting, and then I'll go through the other channels of review through Planning and Zoning Commission and Town Council as well. So now that we kind of framed the planning side and our process here, I'd like to invite Mr. Grizzle to speak on the site. Thanks.
Thank you. My name is Gary Grizzle. I'm a landscape architect with the WLB Group. Yes, I will. Thank you. I didn't know, you know, how close this needs to be. Rob Longacre is the primary planner, overall planner for this, and he couldn't be here tonight, so I'm filling in for him. So be gentle. So we have with us tonight is Liz Mattson. She's a project planner with the WLB Group. And Paula, and she represents Fairfield and the owner. So just a little background. WLB Group is a local firm that does professional development and consulting services. Go to the next slide. Okay, so our client, the WLB's client, is Fairfield Homes. And Fairfield is a local builder. They have constructed numerous homes throughout this region and particularly in Oro Valley. And they have some developments in Oro Valley that they are currently doing. So I'm going to go to the next slide, and where I'm going to be looking at is an enlargement of the area that is in the black dot, just so you kind of have a context. So you've seen this exhibit already. So Fairfield is proposing to construct 19 high-end single-family residential detached units. So as Ms. Chavez mentioned, the site can handle a lot more per zoning, but they've elected to go with the 19. The typical lot size, we have the 19 lots, and then we also have a small recreational area that will be part of this, and that's required part of the preliminary plat. The typical lot size is approximately 60 by 120. We have the layout, the way this was worked, it's working with the topography, but also one of the main things that we're trying to achieve here is to gain maximum views to the Catalina Mountains. So that's where you can kind of see the majority of these lots are kind of pointing in that direction. So a homeowners association will be established with this project. And you do that so that they will oversee and maintain this whole property, you know, in a good way so that it's aesthetically pleasing and that it meets all the standards, you know, that probably most of you live with already. The architectural design of the homes that is being done by Fairfield is still in development. However, the color, the materials, the styles are all going to meet Oro Valley's design standards. So, like we'd mentioned before, this property is zoned R6 multifamily residential. Fairfield has elected to go with the 19 single-family detached instead of the higher density residential product that is permitted by the zoning district. Our layout here provides 35% open space, which is a requirement of the R6 district. So we have that. The site is also surrounded by zoning that is R144, R136. And what this does, the houses that are located within 100 feet of this site boundary has to be limited to single story with a maximum height of 18 feet. Houses outside of that 100-foot area are permitted to be 25 feet and two-story. So we talked a little bit about, or Ms. Chavez talked a little bit about the grading exception. In order to develop this property, we are going to need a grading exception for certain areas, small portions of the site. Oro Valley's code allows for cuts and fills up to 6 feet high And then you can go up to 8 feet high if you have terraces. So we're in the middle of designing it, but we have found that we're going to need some small areas that are going to have this grading exception. The majority of the site, we're going to comply with town's grading ordinance. Those particular areas where the grading exceptions are located are in the southeast corner. I'm going to go ahead and draw on this. This guy showed me how to do this. So I'm drawing a circle around an area that this is the general area where we're expecting to have some grading exceptions. You can go ahead and clear that. So if you look at this map up on the screen, you can see there are some contour lines, some black lines, and what that basically is means that there's ridges that protect the site. So to the west, there's a ridge, and it's off-site. I'll go ahead and, it's a little bit hard to see on that. I'll go ahead and mark it. It's this ridge right here. You can go ahead and clear that. That is a ridge that protects the adjacent properties from looking at this property. There's another ridge and higher areas up in this area. You can go ahead and clear that one. So when we do our grading exception, these grading exception areas are down kind of in an area that is not very visible, and it's largely screened from any adjacent residences. So if you look at the site, if you're in the sanctuary at Silverhawk or other areas, and you look at the site, you'll see some eroded slopes. There's been damage on this property in the past. It's been for a long time. It's been disturbed. But there's some slopes in there that are eroding, and there's hardly any vegetation on them. When this project goes through, those slopes will be treated. They will be landscaped with a vegetative cover to help prevent future erosion. Just want to make that clear. Site access. So we talked about site access. Per an agreement between the current property owner and Meritage Homes is the one who developed Sanctuary at Silverhawk. There was an agreement that has already been established that allowed access from First Avenue to the site. An easement was granted between that property owner, allowing that access. That gets us all the way from First Avenue to the property site. Our portion of the work, we will construct this new access road from the end of the existing pavement to our property, to our subject property. One thing that's, when the development of Sanctuary at Silverhawk was done, the utilities were stubbed out. So the utilities are stubbed out for this. And so it'll just be picking those up and then taking them to the site. So this agreement that this existing agreement also requires that the HOA of the 19 units collect fees, and the fees will be used to maintain and repair the roads. So the HOA for the 19 units will collect fees from those people. That money is taken, and it will be given to the Sanctuary at Silverhawk HOA for the maintenance of those roads. So again, Rob is the primary point of contact for this, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to present.
Thank you very much, Mr. Grizzle. So now, as I promised, we got to the most important part of the meeting where we get to hear from you folks. If you've got more than one question, that's great. Please try and keep it to one or two succinct questions so that we can try and get to as many folks as possible. if we have more time, I'm certainly willing to circle back around and try and get as many questions answered as possible. This goes for the applicant and staff. If you hear any jargon or terms or acronyms or anything that's unclear, please raise your hand, and we'll be happy to try and rephrase it in a way that conveys the same bit of information. Because we have folks listening on Zoom, if you would be so kind as to wait to ask your question until we get the microphone over to you, I'd appreciate that. Otherwise, they won't be able to hear the conversation in the room. For the folks on Zoom, I do have a slide up here. You'll have to raise your hand if you have a question. You can either click on the little hand icon there in the yellow circle, or depending on the device you're on, you may have to click the three dots and more to get to that function. And we will be notified here in the room when you do have a raised hand. If you're on a phone, you'll have to use *9. And then to unmute, you'd have to hit *6. If anybody is having any Zoom issues, please contact my colleague, Mr. Kyle Packer, at 229-4822, and he'd be more than willing to try and rectify the issue at hand. So you'll also notice I'll have Mr. Packer flash up his screen over there when he gets a second. He's going to be keeping notes of our conversation tonight. I just want to make sure everybody knows that we're tracking your conversation, what comments and concerns and issues you might have. Ultimately, those are put together and will help inform staff's recommendation to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then we forward those on to the Commission and Council as well, so that they have all that information at hand. And tonight's recording, as well as our PowerPoint presentation, are also uploaded to ovprojects.com. So if somebody missed the meeting or wants to just go back and clarify something, they're more than able to do that. So I think I've got everything. We'll go ahead and put this up, and can I just have some show of hands of folks who have questions here in the room? We'll start here, sir, and then I'll come back that way. And if you're on Zoom, yep, I've got one hand up, so please go ahead. Let me walk over here. I'm going to have to hold on to the mic, though. Sorry.
My question has to do with just the layout and the contours. Yes, there are ridges that go all the way around there. I live in Palisades Point. In fact, I can see my house in Palisades Point. And those ridges right now protect my house from seeing the promenade out here, this brand-new giant retirement community. And those ridges protect us from seeing that perfectly. We don't see the final contours here, so we can't tell, because that's a highly risen area there. I've walked all over that place. And if you go put houses on top of that, then I'm going to see those houses, and I'm not going to like that very much. So I need to see what your final contour looks like, and how are you going up on top of that platform, because that's a rose-up place there, and there are ridges around it. If you're going to build down in there, I got to see the final contours. But I'm very concerned that you're going to put these houses up too high, and then we'll see them from Palisades South, and Palisades Point will look right at that area. Right now, the ridge protects us from all of that new construction that's going on. But if you get on top of that ridge, we're going to see your houses.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Grizzle, do you happen to know? Yeah, maybe that detail hasn't been done yet, but.
So, is that on? Yep, okay. So the final grading has not been done. The pads in general are going to be at grade or even lower than what they are. But to your point, I mean, I think what we'll have to do is once we get the final grading, then we'll have to look. I suspect you would see a portion of the tops, but not the whole house. But it's hard for me to tell at this point.
Okay, so we'll have more detail at the next meeting for sure.
And then the other question is just on the size of the lots. They're 60 by 120, and then I'm just curious on the setbacks. Are 20 on each side and 30 in the front? How do you get a bloody house inside of that lot? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it would just be fit in there with those setbacks. I mean, this is common. Pardon me?
Into the bike, yep.
On RSIC, Michael, you can correct me on this. Those setbacks are for the property. So between one-story houses, you have to have 10 feet between the structures. So that's on, and all these homes will be one story. Okay.
Okay, thank you. So we got a question here, and then I'll come back over there. Oh, I got to hang on to it, sorry.
We can't. My name is Dr. Amy Eisenberg, and I have a number of questions. This is my concern. We live in the Donna Autumn sacred homeland, and the chair of the Donna Autumn Nation asks us all to kindly respect and protect every twig and rock in their sacred homeland. We try to live by this. Donna Autumn elders remind us that to respect Komkichud, the turtles, the tortoises, Gopherus Marafke. And there is a viable, vulnerable, Sonoran desert tortoise population that is struggling to survive and thrive in our conservation zone where the Silver Hawk Conservation Trail was created by Oro Valley. Now, a road will be built just adjacent to that trail. And yesterday I saw an off-road vehicle going down our Silver Hawk Conservation Trail. And then they went up onto this property, the steep hills there, as so many other off-road vehicles. In the past, we kindly asked Tucson Water to put up a barricade on Palisades Road to protect the Sonoran Desert tortoise population that lives in this zone. They are a viable, multi-generational population, and we love them dearly. I'm a Jane Goodall Institute grantee for stewardship and the preservation of life, and we have been stewarding this area for many years. And sadly, I found one large female that was shot up with bullets. Much garbage. Finally, Kit Donnelly removed this, so he said today, or bagged it up. But there are dozens and dozens and dozens of pounds of trash on this property. And it's disgraceful. And it has greatly impacted the tortoises that are currently brumating on the slopes of this property. And when they're not brumating, they walk on the trail, and they feed on the trail, and they copulate on these slopes. And I'm concerned about the road building, if off-road vehicles are still using it, and how these tortoises in brumation will be protected from grading. And if it's not going to happen in brumation, and they're walking in this zone that is adjacent to our conservation zone, and tortoises do not discern between property lines, how will they be protected? We are given life that we may enhance life. Remember, remember the sacredness of life.
Okay. Do you guys, Mr. Grizzle or Paula, do you know the design of the road at this point? Probably not, but do you have any information that you could provide in terms of what you will be doing in terms of that design?
The design of the road is under design right now, and it is going to be to meet Oro Valley standards is what I can tell you. So I don't have any additional information that might shed some light on this.
And then if you do come across any desert tortoise during grading activities, you're going to abide by game and fish protocol in terms of handling those, I presume, correct?
That is correct. It's a game and fish guideline that if a tortoise is seen on site, then it has to be the equipment stops. Tortoise is picked up and moved out of harm's way.
Okay, thank you. Looks like I do have a couple of hands on Zoom, so folks in the room, if you could just be patient. Justin, if we could have Brad Kratoval, or maybe I can do it. I'm not sure. I guess I can. Okay, just make sure you're unmuted on your end. Yep, okay.
Go ahead. Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, so this is Brad Kratoval. I'm a resident at Sanctuary at Silver Hawk. And in looking at the diagrams, I noticed that the access road that gets you from Naranja Avenue that's already developed in Sanctuary at Silver Hawk, there's an extension of Naranja that has to go, it's probably about a, quarter to half a mile to get you over to the project area. And that access road has to cross the 100-year floodplain and a wash area. And there's kind of several flows of wash that go down through there. And I don't see that as part of the project, which I was kind of surprised. But I would like to understand how that road is going to actually be constructed so that the natural stormwater flow, when it floods, doesn't affect the road. Can we get some details on that? And I'm just surprised that that's not part of the project. I know there's an easement for that. However, the development of that road is fairly significant to get out to that project, and has some significant challenges from an engineering standpoint to cross that floodplain.
Sure.
So my question is what is the one? Why is that not in the plan? And two, what is the concept for how that road is going to cross that floodplain to allow it to continue to flow and not affect upstream, which is the sanctuary at Silver Hawk? Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you very much for the question, Brad. So I'll just reiterate, we do not have a formal submittal at this point. So those design details will be included as part of that formal submittal. So that information will be available as soon as that's provided to us. Mr. Grizzle, it sounds like you don't necessarily have more information on the road design at this point, right? So I might ask Mr. Laws with our town engineering department if he could maybe just provide a little insight in terms of what the town will be looking for to address Brad's question.
All right. Thanks, Mike. David Laws, I work for the town, an engineer. Basically, the road will have to provide all-weather access. So no different than from any other project in the town that provides access to either a commercial business or a residential home. That access to that home would have to be all-weather. So if you look at what the drainage crossing is up at Palisades Road, Palisades Road is elevated, the drainage goes underneath. This project will have to do something similar to make sure the drainage goes underneath the road. That way, if those washes are flowing, residents from this project can get out safely. So we're very preliminary at this stage. You know, we don't have that information just yet, but that's what would be required with this project.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Laws. Murali, if you could be promoted, and I apologize in advance. I'm sure I'm going to butcher several names. Okay, yeah, if you could just make sure you're unmuted on your... Yep, looks like you should be good to go.
Yeah, thank you. I am a resident of the sanctuary at Silver Hawk, and I have a couple of questions to clarify. The first thing I'm concerned about is, I understand that the new lot is going to have multiple single family homes, which are probably two story in height. And I concur with the other gentleman who actually asked about the height of the property and visibility to either the other community or the sanctuary people. That's one question which you already answered. The second one is the plan to access the property via the current sanctuary at Silver Hawk Gate. Okay. And we have actually purchased this property in the belief that, gate is going to be exclusive to the sanctuary at Silver Hawk folks. And when we bought this property, we were told by Meritage, and my fathers were told that Meritage is planning to buy that other lot, and then the access lot will be provided. And that's the reason for the easement. But we didn't know about them not buying it or whatever happened after like the last 4 years. So my question is, because that lot was considered to be a mixed multifamily home or a single family home or even professional offices, when the easement was granted, does it mean that, let's say tomorrow, this plan doesn't go through and there are professional offices coming up there, like medical offices, does it mean that even those will be granted access through a residential gate? Will it also mean that the gate has to be open during office hours? What does the town think when they have to provide a plot like this for residential access or, while considering that potential future easement maybe for professional access offices or for other subdivisions to come through?
Okay, great. Thank you very much for the question. Gary or Paula, representing the property owner, if you had any. So, yeah, go ahead.
So the homes will be single story. I think I heard the question if they're going to be two story. They're going to be single story. Whether or not the if this property doesn't go through and it's office, I think that easement and agreement is still there. Yeah.
So the agreement between the original owners, Meritage Builders, so the original owners of Silverhawk, and then the owners of this 10 acres, that agreement said that they could have up to 50 homes on that property, but they would not do any commercial homes. And so that agreement, part of the association on the proposed project would contribute to the maintenance of the roads and the gate. So that is the legal access through the property. Before Meritage purchased that property and developed those homes, there was legal access through the property. So they purchased it knowing that there was access to the proposed development.
Okay, but so just to clarify, the agreement that you reached with Meritage did limit it just to single family, though?
It could be townhouses, okay, apartments.
Right. But not offices or commercial.
Not offices. Right. Okay. And up to 50 units, and they had to have a minimum of $300,000 closing cost.
Okay, thank you. So ma'am in the green has been patient, and then I'll come up here. Oh, 1 second.
I guess it goes along with one of the other speakers. All of us who purchased in Sanctuary at Silverhawk were told this is a gated community. We were not told about the easement. So I guess maybe we have to go after Meritage because they were not upfront with all of us. And my concern also, not just the water flow, but we're going to be having basically about 40% more people driving through our community. We have 44 homes. Now you're talking about making it almost 50% larger, and that means a lot more people coming through there, and we won't have the privacy that we have now, and we won't have the quiet community that we have now.
Okay, thank you. Just go ahead, ma'am.
That's okay. This is a follow-up question for Paula. Were any other access roads considered, or is this it, Naranja? And if so, what did Meritage get for that access?
So the question was, were there alternate access points considered before this one?
At one time, La Posada, which is building the retirement community, had considered purchasing that property, and so access would have been through their property because it's adjacent to it. But legal access was established many, many years ago. That land was originally part of Steam Pump Ranch, actually. And so there was always access to Naranja from that property.
Just one question. So was that before Meritage?
There was. It was in a slightly different location, and they asked to have it moved. So the property owners agreed to move it.
And I can just reiterate from the town's perspective. So I'm sure, as homeowners and Sanctuary at Silverhawk, that all of the information about that access wasn't divulged. I can certainly understand that. I do feel empathetic for you, but from the town's perspective, they have legal access, and we have to allow legal access to their property. So from a jurisdictional perspective, that's where we are. Not to say that you guys couldn't reach out to Meritage and voice your concerns to those folks. So I had a question here and then a couple folks online.
Yeah, actually, it is a comment. And I'm surprised not to see more of the town council here in person hearing our comments. But my name is Peter March with Sanctuary at Silverhawk Community here in Oro Valley. I am here to strongly oppose this project. This project will destroy native vegetation and wildlife on not only the 10-acre parcel, but the sensitive nearly 50 acres of contiguous natural desert open space that you see on this map that includes a sensitive wash area and is home to this sensitive wildlife. Additionally, it will severely impact our peace and quiet and property values of our private, secure, small gated HOA as they bring heavy equipment through our gate, down our street, build a new road to a completely separate, unrelated community with smaller lots and lower priced homes, all based on an easement that was not well communicated to us. This project makes no sense. We need to look at an alternative. So, hey, look, I've been in business for 40 years. I've been bringing CEOs and executives together to solve problems. I get it. If you bring up a problem, have a solution. I know most of this room, and I think our community in a bigger sense is willing to do the work to bring the right parties together to look at a solution that is more viable and sustainable and doesn't involve destruction. I urge the town council to oppose this project in its current state. Oppose the grading exception request. We know what happened to the Valley Vista community in Big Wash, where homes are settling, requiring invasive supports for foundations to make the homes even viable. We know what happens when these things are not well planned out. Please oppose this project, oppose the preliminary plat. Give us the time to work with the stakeholders on a solution that makes sense. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, sure. And I will point out, and folks, I appreciate that you're emotional about the clapping doesn't help. No, there's no decisions being made tonight. You want to do jazz hands or something to show your support, go for it. But I'm just trying, again, to have as efficient a meeting as possible. So we do have two council members here this evening. Just wanted you to make you aware. Council Member Bowen and Council Member Green are here. Yeah, okay. Right, without disrupting the conversation. So you can celebrate. And yes, and we have, right, sorry, I just got distracted there. So, and we have other commissioners and council members who go back and watch the video, which is why we record them and put them online. So I assure you, the decision makers are paying attention. I promise that.
One more quick comment.
Sure.
So I personally am reaching out to Kit Donnelly, to Fairfield Homes, to La Posada, to the Nature Conservancy, to the Conservation Fund. I personally, and I know our community is willing to work to bring the stakeholders together to work on the solution, right? Give us some time. Reject this until we can work on a more viable solution. Thank you.
Okay. I saw a hand up here. I'm going to go back. I got a couple of folks online who have been patiently waiting. So if Suresh, looks like you're ready to talk, please just make sure you're unmuted on your end. Go right ahead.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, I concur with Peter. A lot of concerns were raised in this meeting, and I have many more as well. So instead of going down that path, my question is more to the town. So that what can the town council do to address the concerns of all the community members around this property and not make this construction happen?
Okay, so the question...
What can the town council do?
Yeah. Well, got it. Okay, thank you. So I can... handle that one. So as Ms. Chavez pointed out, there are two applications that we are being proposed here by the applicant. The first is the grading exception. The second is a preliminary plat. So the grading exception is a discretionary ask, which means council can say yes or no. They have the ability to do that because the applicant is asking for something that goes beyond what code allows. If they didn't have the grading exception and they were just designing within the parameters of the code, town council cannot say no. So to your point about saying no to the preliminary plat, they have their rights, they have their entitlements because the zoning is established. If town council said no, we would open ourselves up to litigation, essentially, which we would lose, and that has happened in the past. So to your point, sir, that yes, the discretionary ask of the grading exception, there is some yes or no component to that, but the preliminary plat itself, if it didn't have the grading exception, is not a yes or no. It's a let's figure out how to design it if there are improvements that need to be made. So just want to set the table for the distinction between those two things. Thomas, looks like you are the other person online who has not asked a question yet, so please make sure you're unmute. Go right ahead, Thomas.
Yeah, hey, thanks a lot. Hey, hopefully you can hear me.
Yes.
I actually have a comment first and a question. So the comment is more along the lines of what Peter stated. We live in Sanctuary on Village Canyon Place. So obviously we're four houses down from where this proposed road would go into. So clearly we oppose this, right? When the statement was made that the easement was poorly communicated, it was actually not communicated. So when we purchased our home here, and I think we were like 10th or 11th in the community, something like that, we were actually told by Meritage that there would be no further development, and this was a private community. So maybe the issue we have is with Meritage and not so much the town of Oro Valley. You know, so when Peter's asking, you know, for us to, you know, oppose this, by default, we oppose this, right? You know, the additional 18 to, I don't know, 35, 40 more cars that come through our front gate would certainly impact the privacy of our community. And it's one of the reasons why we purchased here to begin with. So the question I have is the statement that Meritage had a legal agreement with, is it Fairfield, I think, is who the home builder is?
So I know the agreement is with the property owner, not with Fairfield. Fairfield is the proposed developer.
Okay. So the agreement on the easement with Meritage and the property owner, is that addressed through the town of Oro Valley, or is that addressed directly with Meritage?
So when the Sanctuary at Silverhawk subdivision was being platted back in 2016, as part of that effort and being approved by town council, included a easement, the access easement that Ms. Chavez referenced. So in that respect, it was reviewed by the town, yes, and approved by the town.
But for us, sort of, but for us, the folks who live in Sanctuary or even who are greatly impacted by this, is our issue with the town of Oro Valley, or is it an issue with Meritage?
Oh, got it. Okay. So we as the town have to legally allow access because it was approved as part of a final plat approved by a town council before the current one that we have. So we have to allow access to the property. Now, back to whether that was communicated to homeowners or not, that would certainly be Meritage, not the town.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. All right. We've got a couple more. Anybody in the room that has questions that hasn't asked one yet, and then I will certainly circle back. So, sir? Oh, go ahead.
Thanks. Can I just read this here?
Sure thing.
You raised a question about the roads, and I had a question about that. My name is Frank Engel. I've lived in Palisades Point for 25 years, been on the board 20, not currently, and very familiar with, since we're gated, we own our own roads. And let me tell you, they're expensive. The kiosks, the preservation of the asphalt itself, undercutting and during rain runoff. In front of my house, I have a cut. Some of the stuff that comes all the way from Cat Shadows comes across Charlieu right in front of my house. I actually cut the curb there because I get rocks this big out on the street. And it's a 12-foot wide cut, and I've seen water flowing 6 inches deep there. So undercutting of the pavement is something as well. That's not my concern right now. I do have a question about how wide the road would be.
Okay. Mr. Grizzle, if you know that yet.
I actually don't know the answer to that, but we're going to follow the town standard to whatever it is that Mr. Laws.
Okay. All right.
So, and Mr. Laws, what's our standard?
So
right away with
his...
Oh, sorry, one sec. We're going to get a question. He's going to answer it for us.
So just real quick, typically the road's going to probably be a minimum of 28 feet wide. Okay,
28 feet wide. Thank
minimum.
You, Mr. Laws.
When the two Silverhawks were under construction, Palisades had a lot of traffic going across it from the villages down to the Sanctuary. And I can tell you the road is still damaged from all the heavy trucks going across there. When you drive down Palisades and you get to that area just right where the two little houses by themselves are, you'll feel a dip right there. And that was not there before all that traffic. And they built a berm and 2x12 planks across it. It still sank, and it's never been fixed. That wasn't what I came here for, but just some information. Being on the board of Palisades, I can tell you when we've had our kiosks run into and tipped over. We've had cars crash through our gates, ruining them. We've had to replace the kiosks, the electronics. We've had to...
Sir, if you have just another question, we could get to the question, please.
I have
please.
A statement I want to read. In the 25 years that I've lived in Palisades, in my second house within that gated community, I've watched a lot of the development going on. There was an agreement made actually between the city and the developers of Silverhawk, plural, that they limited the number of houses in what's the lower one called? In the sanctuary, pardon. And gave the developer more houses up in the villages. That was an agreement that was struck here in his room. And that preserved minimum half acre in the entire triangle of Palisades, First Avenue, South, and East. First houses that were there that were when it was not even there was a term for those houses that are in that section that's not blued.
The Palisades splits.
Pardon?
Palisades splits. That's what we call them.
No, it was called a.
I thought I wrote it down.
It was the Wildcat area.
Okay.
And that was there even before I came in 98.
Right.
The Wildcat area, Palisades Point, Palisades South, and Sanctuary at Silverhawk, there's not a single home, over 200 of them, that is less than half an acre. And I am just livid that that these people would come in and propose 18 homes on 10 acres. Through the gated community. I don't live in Silverhawk, but I certainly live in that area, and our property values are definitely affected by $300,000 homes.
Sure.
Okay. If you could just finish up, sir.
The environmentally sensitive area. I believe you answered my question, but I did a little homework this morning, and I used the old trick of cutting up the paper and weighing it to see what percent was developed versus open. And it comes out about 60% is improved through, and I hate to use that word, through this plan. And I don't see, that may be compliant with R6 or whatever it is, but it isn't compliant with environmentally sensitive. No way.
Okay, so that's...
The other thing that I was appalled with, and I've run three businesses and high-tech companies, and asking for a variance to grading and providing absolutely no information as to what's going to be cut, how much earth is going to be moved, how you're going to deal with the 2-to-1 grade now coming up to the top of the ridge that isn't even on your property. This plan just makes no sense to me, and I'm not happy about that.
Thank you for your comments. So again, I will just reiterate, we do not have a formal submittal at this point.
I understand.
When we get one, they will be required to show that detail because we're going to review it too. So you will see it. This is just the introduction.
From 2-to-1 to 5-to-1 to get up the hill into the...
They're going to have to show how that works.
Even on their property. I'd like to see how they're going to do
That's fine. And so we will see that information. Something else that just needs to be reiterated here is I know you were making the qualification about lot sizes. So the R6 zoning district that they have, they're entitled to build smaller lots than what is in Palisades Point or Palisades South or even in Sanctuary. So the town cannot tell them no if they have the right to do it. So that sets us up for a legal challenge. That's basics of zoning. So what we can focus on tonight is, are there improvements that you guys could see from what they're proposing and would like to see revised as part of that formal submittal moving forward into the second neighborhood meeting? So I just wanted to qualify your comment with that, okay. Just to be clear.
Thank you.
Sure. So is there anybody who, yes, ma'am, you haven't asked the question, and then I'll come back to you.
Hi, yes, I live in Sanctuary. You mentioned before about if this goes through, they would be paying us for the roadway usage. So during the time of construction with heavy equipment, which could take months, year plus, who is paying us to go through that gate and down that road and all the wear and tear on that road? Who pays us during, before this community and HOA even exist? And the second question, so you can answer both, the property owner, the property owner, the property owner. Name, please.
Okay. So the first question is, okay. Yep. Gary, go right ahead.
So the property owner is the Lofts LLC, and that's what I know. So Oro Valley Lofts. So, and on the, when does the HOA start? So, okay, so from what I understand is, and this is something we can talk on future, but after construction is done, the roads will be resealed before the homeowners come in.
Okay, so I think the question, though, was while construction is happening before the establishment of the HOA and the money's being collected, how is the sanctuary being offset before the establishment of the HOA? And I presume the answer is they're so, not, but
well,
if you have an answer.
Yeah.
As far as I know, that was not addressed in the agreement.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, sure. We'll check into that.
So, we'll look into it.
Yeah. So with all the wear and tear, gate opening, closing, with all the construction equipment, this hasn't been addressed? You're saying this hasn't been addressed?
To my knowledge, it was not addressed in the... I'm sorry. It wasn't addressed in the agreement, but I will check that for you, okay?
So
I will
look into it further. We'll have information
on that at
the next
meeting. But to my knowledge, that was not addressed in the agreement. So what it said was that once construction was done, the roads that are part of the sanctuary would be resealed, and then the HOA, which is established, you know, once the development is done, not necessarily when the construction of the homes is done, then that HOA would be responsible for that.
So when you say that was not addressed, does that mean issue closed, or we will be addressing it?
I don't know, ma'am. I can't speak to that, but I will look at the agreement, and that's something that maybe could be worked out with Fairfield Homes.
No, you work it out with our HOA because you're opening and closing our gate. That's what you
it would have
out
to
with.
Be. But see, at this point, there is no HOA on that proposed project. That's what I'm saying.
No, there's our no, HOA that you're going through.
I understand, but there.
Nobody
the contractors have a right to use the road to develop the land and to pay for that during the construction or the development of that site was not addressed. In other words, the current property owner or whoever would buy it was not asked to pay the HOA for that time.
But if they damage it through that process, then they would be responsible for fixing it. So
right.
There isn't a payment up front per se, but if they damage something or the wear and tear breaks something, they would be responsible for fixing it.
Right.
Including the gate, I presume.
If the gate were broken, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you have a question, ma'am? I thought I saw your hand up.
I do, and I don't. I'm not sure if it's for the town of Oro Valley or if it's for you. We are the house that you're going to drive this road past. And over the years, we've had many people come and stake the lot. And originally, we've always been talking to these people to find out kind of what's going on. We were told that the last person, or the, one of the people, that, I don't even know when it was, but that they would have to build a bridge over the 100-year, sorry, that they would have to build a bridge over the 100-year area to get back to that, and that because that is so expansive and it was going to be so costly, that probably that lot area would never get developed. Then we were told that they had changed that whole concept, that the town of Oro Valley may have allowed for a different type of thing so that this guy could sell the land. So I'm curious, is that bridge still required by Oro Valley to build to get across that area? Because I can tell you the culverts that we have through our neighborhood, they fill up, and then our land does get affected heavily by that water over the last couple years. So we've had, our HOA has had to do some things to establish that. I'm very concerned that if you come in and build a road directly in front of my house, when I'm already having issues coming this way from that area, that it's going to be a bigger problem. So I guess I really am concerned about how the water flow is, and I know that's important to Oro Valley. So I'd like to know, did anything change as far as that was, you know, over the last several years, that requirement? Did anything by you, Oro Valley?
So, Mr. Laws, I will kick that one to you.
Sure. So the quick answer is nothing's changed in terms of requirements. There's no requirement for a bridge. There's a requirement for all-weather crossing. So what does that mean? It could be a bridge. It could be a culvert. It's whatever it takes to get the road over the drainage and the drainage under the road. Typically, again, for this size of a wash, we're going to be looking at culverts similar to what you're seeing at Palisades or north at the villages at Silverhawk. So that's a simple answer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Laws. I think I saw a hand up over here. Did you have a question? No? It's okay. You don't have to. If you do, though. Okay, sure.
I want to show this so that everybody can see it, as well as our council members. And I have a copy here to share with you. Two concerns I have. One is on fill. The outline here is the Oro Valley loss, and this is from Pima County maps. And if you can see it, the outline is in black. Sanctuary or Silverhawk is abutting on the north side and on the west side. Current drainage from Oro Valley Lofts, about 10% of it drains westerly onto Sanctuary of Silverhawk. The other 90%, approximately, that entire drainage area, that 10 acres, funnels down into a very narrow passage going into Pima County's property to the south. If their intent is to fill this area down here to accommodate lots 8 through 12, that is an effective earthen dam that they're going to create across that area that's going to restrict the flow of this. And if you think about failures of earthen dams, it's not the surface that's the problem. It's what's happening below the surface. All that water has to escape this area. This is the only outlet. Subsurface drainage of that water is going to cause soil liquefaction, and it's going to cause sedimentation or settlement of this area. Now, if you think of what's happening at Rancho Vistoso Valley Vista, that was fairly mild fill on a fairly flat plain. Now we're talking about fairly substantial fill in a narrow gap with huge hydrodynamic pressure leading down upon there. It's a recipe for failure. And I hope that the town will learn from what happened at Valley Vista and not repeat the same mistake here. So I would strongly urge you not to permit any fill in this area.
Okay.
One other thing, if I might.
Sure.
The other area of concern that was brought up is along the northern boundary line, there's a very steep slope. It's about 30 feet high. It's an existing slope. There's significant erosion along that slope currently. A lot of the erosion is over 6 feet deep. That's continuing. That slope is not currently stable and hasn't been for decades. Excavating anything along what is that top border there from left to right is going to destabilize that slope even further. So significant ongoing erosion is going to occur. Excavation is just going to exacerbate that. So it's going to lead to increased erosion, increased risk of landslide. In California, they would call this a mudslide just waiting to happen. We don't get heavy rains here that often, but history proves we do get heavy rains. And when those heavy rains hit, both this area down here is going to be a point of failure, and this whole slope could fail. Half of that slope is roughly on Sanctuary Silverhawk property. So at the very least, if the town does allow this, we would demand that Sanctuary Silverhawk be held harmless for any impact of any drainage resulting from this, because we can't control that.
Sure. Okay, thank you. So I will point out that they will, again, have to provide the level of detail as part of their formal submittal to demonstrate how that works. So I want, did you have any, Mr. Laws, anything you'd like to just kind of touch on in terms of what we require?
So as the project develops, assuming they make an application for the project to move forward, one of the requirements will be a very detailed drainage analysis in addition to a very detailed grading plan. So those are typical elements. These are engineered elements, the topography, drainage, that all gets studied very carefully, both by the engineer who develops the plan in addition to town staff who reviews the plan.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Law. So we're going to jump back real quick to folks on Zoom. Derek Slayton, you're up next. Please go ahead and make sure you're unmuted on your end.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Great, thank you. So quick question, since it's obvious that none of us in Sanctuary at Silverhawk were made aware of this easement, I include myself in that when we bought in. So where can we find details, or will details be provided to us on who agreed to what with specifics so that we can understand the impacts? We don't know if the gate's going to be open. We don't know if there's going to be patrols now that come through. We don't know the maintenance of the roads that has already been alluded to. It seems like there's a tremendous amount of ambiguity here. And I understand your position from the city's perspective. It sounds like you're not going to weigh into that because that was between two private parties, but we don't have a lot of recourse, it seems.
Sure.
So is it possible to get those details?
So we can certainly put the final plat on this project's webpage on ovprojects.com, where the easement boundaries and use of the easement are specified. I don't know if the agreement between Meritage and Oro Valley Lofts, is that a public document? Or if it is, we can put that on the website too. But if not, I can't commit to somebody else's contract going on a public website.
I'm not sure about that, but what I would suggest is that we would, the property owners could have a meeting separately with whoever wants to, who represents the HOA at Sanctuary, and can go through that agreement and can have copies of that agreement.
Okay.
That's what I would suggest.
Sounds good. Okay. And next, Mark, Mark S. We're going to leave it at that. Sorry, Mark. Please go ahead. You should be unmuted.
Hey, no problem. Mark Saker here at Sanctuary at Silverhawk. I guess in terms of the application, I don't know if this is going to be part of it or not. Is there going to be an outline of, I guess, a bit the timing of the property development, as well as sort of the funding that's secured for it? Will be something that's staged, like, you know, phase one needs to fund phase two, and, you know, pending that, if we're going to have, I guess, maybe the potential for prolonged construction and use of the gate and access through Naranja, as well as don't know if there's going to be any information on the size of kind of the square footage of the homes and expected sort of closing cost goals, things like that.
Okay, sure. Thank you for your question. So I will defer to the applicant in terms of the home design, as well as whether or not, I don't think there's any phasing, but if there's, if this is approved, do we have any idea of timeline for construction?
Too early on to get the phasing of that. But as we go along, we're going to have a second meeting, and we would already have our first submittal in, so that information will be could be available at that time.
Okay. And then I do expect that if Fairfield is the home builder, these will be model homes as opposed to custom homes. So there is a requirement for Planning and Zoning Commission approval of model homes. So before they get constructed, you will see the design for those, the elevations, the color palette. That includes floor plans, so you would be able, as neighbors at that point, to be able to have an understanding of just exactly what models are being proposed. So
yes, that's correct.
Yep. Okay, thank you. One sec. There was a patient gentleman back here.
Oh, thanks. You're going to hold it?
I got to hold it.
Great job. I hope that for the next meeting there's energy like this, because we all need to come together and express how we feel and the needs and concerns. In seeing this area, I will state first, I have been an appraiser and I worked for an assessor's office, and I've seen many, many times that once a company, a developer gets their foot in the door, then they will push and push and push to get other things that they want. And a lot of times the city will acquiesce to that because, well, they're already there. And that's unfortunate. As far as the access road for the egress, that I talked to the head engineer for Oro Valley, and he said, yes, at one time a bridge was going to be required. And because they thought that because it is a 100-year flood, that it would only be a 6-inch maximum flow of water flood over the road that would be built. Well, that can do a lot of damage, and that can back up and cause a lot of problems. But the reason they didn't build this was a bridge was going to be required, and that expense would be excessive. And therefore, this was a problem lot area, which I've seen a lot of. And until a developer is given certain rights and so on, a property will sit. But of course, who gets the monies is the city also. Now, when I voted for the mayor, he had stated a number of times that he was not pro-development and that he needed to hold development in the area. I realize this is R6, but also there's many, many things that are just given away at our cost once we own a home. And I think we need to rise up and be together on this. Now, as far as the development, there are many tortoises in the area. Many. I don't like to bring it up because there are people that poach tortoises. They get $100 a piece for them. They sell them for body parts to areas like China. I've lived in China. I've seen the parts. And that's what happens. And I have a friend who ran into a poacher, and he was bragging that he had 5 in his backpack at the time. So it was $500 in his pocket for what he was taking. Now, this has a lot of tortoises, minimum 20 within probably not even a half a mile radius. Now, what's going to happen to those tortoises with the access road, with the also when you start filling the area and excavating and so on? You go into their dens, you kill them, you crush them, say, well, they'll look out for them. They don't. I've seen that on just north of Palisades when they built there. There's tortoises that I knew that lived there that no longer exist because of the building that they did. They crushed them, they buried them, they suffocated. There's a couple that made it out alive. The rest I've never seen again because they're gone. And they do not take best practice. They also have open trenching, which snakes and animals and tortoises fall into it, and then they backfill into those, and pow, they're gone. But who sees it? Nobody. So what did I do every evening when they were building just north of Palisades? I went over with a hoe because the trenches were over 6 feet deep, and I would pull snakes out, rattlesnakes, different types of snakes, different animals, because they do not take the best practice. And I even talked to Game and Fish. They said, well, it's private property. There's not really anything we do. We can only suggest. So when you bring up them, a state agency, that's got nothing to do with it. You may think or get some satisfaction thinking they'll oversee it. They do not. They don't protect these animals. They don't look after them. And neither do the developers. There was many trees on that area north of Palisades that were knocked over, were broken down. And the developer, Amy, called him and asked him, why are they doing this? He says, well, his blunt response was, they're assholes. Because they don't care. He said, I'm the the contractor. I'm subcontracting to them. There's nothing I can do about them. So when you think that people say they're going to care about this and developers are going to care, you better think twice. Because you've seen it all around you over and over, and it doesn't happen. And I've seen when it doesn't, both an assessor, an appraiser, having lived in this area and seen what's going on. So they'll paint a real nice picture, but there's a lot of things that need to be taken care of, and it's up to us.
Okay, thank you. I see you. Anybody who hasn't had a chance to ask a question yet, I want to make sure everybody has that opportunity. If not, we'll go here, and then I'll come back to you, Amy.
I was just curious when the decision would be made for the change of the grading exception. When is that decision made? Because if they don't get that decision, then they're in trouble. So when is that?
Sure. So again, when we get that formal submittal, Alex will go through the code compliance process. Once it's code compliant, we'll bring it back to neighbors and show what that revised plan is. Then it goes to commission and council. So to answer your question, we don't have dates on those yet. It's dependent, of course, about how long the process takes to get to code conformance and the neighborhood meeting.
There's an exception there somewhere. So
Right, so they're processing their applications on the assumption that they will get the grading exception. So they're going to go together, and yes, it is a risk on their part, but they're probably going to make the decision to process those concurrently. So does that answer your question?
Yes,
sure.
So what's the difference? Why is a 100-year bridge not needed now? Where does that decision get made? When was that made?
Well, so again, I'll hand it off to Mr. Loss.
Okay, I'll go ahead and just try to tackle this again. I don't know where this bridge comment is coming from. Okay, there's nothing different in this area in terms of drainage than there is upstream or downstream. There's no bridges upstream or downstream from here. Everything is a culvert crossing. So the way that works is when they propose a design, they're going to submit a drainage report. The drainage report is going to quantify the amount of drainage in that wash. That wash has a 100-year floodplain, just like every other wash in the region. There's nothing different there. It's the same, except it's just a different size. So they're going to design culverts. Generally, those are oversized because we've got to make sure we can get those maintained. But in terms of a bridge, if they wanted to propose a bridge, they could propose a bridge. But all that is required is to make sure they elevate the road. I heard 6 inches. So when I say all-weather crossing, we allow 6 inches of drainage over a road. That's where the 6 inches is coming from. But generally, most roads are elevated so that all that drainage is going underneath. Okay. Yep.
Okay. Thank you. So, Ms. Eisenberg, here, 1 second so we can hear you.
What is your name?
I'll give you a card after the meeting, but my name is David Laws.
Okay.
Okay.
This road that's going to be built, can I hold this, please?
Nope.
No. Okay. This road that's going to be built adjacent to our Silverhawk Conservation Trail, think about these tortoises. Now, will this trail, as stated previously, extend to cross a paved road in this conservation zone? I'd like to know what the conservation trail means to Oro Valley government. Is it going to extend down to Cañada del Oro as stated previously? I think this is...
Yes.
Yes. So this is going to be a deeply misguided and conflicting type of unsustainable development, a conservation trail with a paved road through it. And in addition, are there any people here who are associated with Meritage Homes? Okay, maybe you can answer this question or maybe not. Meritage Homes planted a bunch of trees just northeast of the sanctuary at Silver Hawk. Most of these trees died, and there are gaping holes. These trees died because of mismanagement, and I'm an agroforester, I am certified. They did not maintain these trees, and sadly, there are a number of holes in this area. And there's a number of piping that is no longer functioning. Will Meritage Homes remove this piping that is just east of the sanctuary at Silver Hawk? It's more hardware, more junk, less vegetation. The reason why these tortoise populations are diminishing is because of habitat fragmentation. I'm sure you are aware of this. Habitat reduction, destruction, roads. These tortoises show up on Palisades Road because they are surrounded by unsustainable development and proposed development projects that are driving them to cross the road. When a Gila monster died in our arms, it was a very sad thing. They are a protected species. Sadly, the Sonoran Desert tortoise, Gophers morafke, Komkichut, is not listed as an endangered species yet. And we don't want that to happen for it to become an endangered species. But sometimes Fish and Wildlife will list when they are about to be teetering on the brink of extinction. And if you reduce their habitat, their food sources, I'm a botanist, there are some tortoise superfoods in this area, and less of it will be available to them. And this paved road through our conservation zone, it just seems not to make a lot of sense. It seems extremely misguided and a complete contradiction. So I'd like to know what a conservation trail actually means to Oro Valley government. When I told the mayor that there are archaeological resources on this trail, and we removed a grinding stone that was right on the trail when it was rerouted, and we found a ceramic shard the other day, the mayor said, there are no archaeological resources on this parcel. That is absolutely false. We have been stewarding this area for many, many years. There are absolutely archaeological resources. The Donna Odom ancestors still dwell in these places, and they ask us to respect and protect the tortoises because they do no harm.
Okay, thank you. Sure. So we're getting close to 7:30 here, so a couple more questions.
So a couple more quick ones. First, did the town, I'm assuming, approve the Valley Vista subdivision?
Yes, yes.
This subdivision now consists of homes sinking and settling and requiring foundation support. Has the town learned anything regarding best practices on approving grading since then?
Okay, so this is a different project, but in regards to Valley Vista, just to clarify, there are two homes that have installed piers underneath those, so just two out of, you know, a pretty big number. In terms of the area that's, you know, impacted right now, it's limited to one corner of the subdivision. This project, just like any project, will have to have a geotechnical analysis. That analysis includes a study of the soils, borings, recommendations, and conclusions done by a professional geotechnical engineer, of which the town will review that.
Okay, thank you.
If I could. Oh, okay. So my question is about how we are assured of a fair and unbiased process for evaluation by the town. I'm trying to understand the question of who's the property owner has been raised several times tonight. And the property owner of this parcel is Oro Valley Loss Liability, Limited Liability Corporation, headquartered in Seattle, Washington. Started by Kit Donnelly, Donnelly Commercial, back in 2011 when they purchased this lot. With a tax assessor address in Tacna, Arizona, receiving bills in Tacna, Arizona, Kit Donnelly resides in this area and has been on the Planning Commission. Now we have Steve Solomon on the council, who started a company that just happens to have the exact same name, Oro Valley Loss Limited Liability Corporation, headquartered here in Arizona in 2018.
Sir, do we have a question about the project this evening?
It's a question.
I know Councilmember Solomon has said that he's not affiliated with Oro Valley
So my question is, the exact same name, can you please help us understand? My head is spinning. How we ensure this process is fair and how we ensure that Steve Solomon, who, by the way, is in the exact same line of business or has been as Kit Donnelly, there is no impropriety in that this is a fair process. I do not want to start conspiracy theories. I don't believe in them. I just like some facts to help us understand what's going on with that. Can we get those answers?
I would encourage you to reach out to Councilmember Solomon if you want questions answered from him. I'm not going to speak for him. I can assure you there are 7 members of the Planning and Zoning Commission and 7 members of council. So even if you've got concerns about one person, justified or not, there's 13 other people who are making decisions based on an application. So again, if you've got follow-up questions for council, I would certainly encourage you to reach out to them. So it is 7:30, so it's actually past 7:30, so I just want to be respectful of everybody's time. I do have a couple more questions on Zoom. Are you guys okay staying until 8 so that I can try and get to those? And obviously feel free to leave if you do not have the time to stay. So Brad, I'm going to promote you again. Please unmute on your end and we can hear your question.
Yeah, I appreciate the time. And I just two things. One, a lot of discussion about this access road that leads to the new property. I would just request that the town include the access road in their description of the property, because it is a significant development that has to occur. And there are some engineering challenges to get across that 100-year floodplain. And I would just like to point out that, culverts may be the solution as compared to a raised road. There are several wash flows through there, so it would be several culverts. So I would just request that the town, when they continue to discuss this property, can include that road as part of the property that has to be developed. That's one. And then two, there's been a lot of discussion about the grading exception. And it's just not very clear as the town's requirements that the developer needs to meet to get a grading exception. So I would just ask that would be very clear in future discussions associated with, you know, what is it that the town evaluates when they give an actual grading exception? Because it doesn't appear to be warranted from all the discussions we've heard today. Any thoughts on that?
Sure, I can answer that from the town's perspective. So I can assure you the engineering and design for the road will absolutely be included with the formal submittal when it comes in. We as staff will not allow the site plan to move forward without that information. So I can assure you it will be available. And with regard to a grading exception, we actually do have criteria in our zoning code that when an applicant is requesting that exception, they have to demonstrate conformance with that criteria, and then staff does an evaluation of whether or not we think what they're proposing meets that criteria or not, and then we end up making that recommendation to commission and council, who then ultimately end up using the same criteria. So we can certainly put that criteria on the webpage for this project. We can pull it out of the code because it is kind of buried in there. You'd have to know where to look for it, but we can certainly put that on the website so folks know what that evaluative criteria is. So we'd be happy to do that. Suresh, I'm going to allow you to talk. Go ahead and make sure you're unmuted on your end.
Yep. First of all, thank you for allowing more time. pardon my ignorance, a quick question. So the word exception itself means we are making some changes to the rules or allowing some changes to the norm that we have. So the Oro Valley Council and the committee is hearing all the concerns of the Oro Valley citizens, Oro Valley residents. So what is the other force that's making them to do the exception or allow the exception? So what is the logic behind that? Why do we need to do exception at all?
Sure. Mr. Grizzle, would you just like to provide a little detail on just exactly why you need the exception?
So the Oro Valley Code allows you a certain amount of cut and fill. And when you exceed that by a small amount or whatever, you have to ask for a grading exception. So the sanctuary at Silverhawk had a grading exception. The entry road had a grading exception, and it was approved by town council.
Does that answer your question, sir? Oh, we might have lost him. Sorry, Suresh. Okay. Nope, he popped back up.
Oh, thank you.
Yep. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, not completely. So I don't know what was the opposition that happened when the sanctuary at Silverhawk was built. But now, pretty much everyone in that area is opposing this exception. So how are the voices of the residents around this property are heard? And why would that exception be needed from Oro Valley Town's perspective? Council's perspective?
I think I know what your question is. So your question is, knowing that there's concern from Sanctuary at Silverhawk neighbors, what justification could there be for town council to approve the exception? Am I getting that right?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's correct. By exception itself, it means like we're allowing some modification. So why do we have to do that?
Sure. So again, I'll go back to, we have criteria in our code that they will have to demonstrate conformance with. But without a doubt, concerns from neighbors absolutely factors into council members' decisions. So absolutely. And then Murali, please go ahead.
Yes, I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to continue what Suresh mentioned, right? So I understand that there are some criteria for granting an exception. And let's say this question is for the town, but not for Fairfield or WLB or anybody else, or even for the owner. But my question is, now the town of Oro Valley has got strict zoning codes. They have strict rules and regulations, and they've got strict details on how they want to preserve the town of Oro Valley, right? Now, granting an exception, let's assume that WLB and all the other folks are coming in, providing an application, absolutely perfect. They're going to spend $100 million making it the most perfect up to code, and they're requesting an exception. What is the mathematics, or are there any metrics for the town of Oro Valley to even consider that exception? And how are they even putting a weightage on the residents' opposition to granting an exception? Because I assume that, you know, an exception will be granted for things like eminent domain, or for things like where they want to put a railroad through the property, or they want to build a highway or some kind of like an airport. Maybe exceptions are there. This is a small piece of land, okay, which is not in any eminent domain type of a situation. And let's say the builder comes up with a perfect plan, adhering to all the environmental details and adhering to every single structural requirements as per the Oro Valley requirements. Will Oro Valley still grant an exception without even putting a weightage on the owners of the property voices? How much weightage is given? What's the mathematics for this? Will we be given a proper open communication related to why an exception was granted and the reasons for the weightage for, one is their design, and second is what is the weightage for the people of Oro Valley or residents of Oro Valley giving that. So that's very important, right? Because you just can't say that, hey, an exception was given because they were perfect. Okay, that side they may be perfect, but on the other side, we are also opposing that. So what's the weightage given? Are the people given importance, or is it more like a more like an importance towards commercialization and for people who are, it's very important to acknowledge that developers often prioritize profitability, and their objectives must not come at the cost of environmental degradation or circumventing established rules and regulations and community standards. Okay, like in our property, if I go to the HOA and say I want to put a big green tent or a shed in front of my house, they're not going to agree because there are rules and regulations and there are community standards. Similar to that, why grant an exception to somebody who is saying that they want to do something? Let them be within the rules and regulations of the Oro Valley code, 6 feet, 8 feet, whatever that code is, and then let them figure out how they can build that. See, agreed, we cannot go and fight with Meritage for their non-communication. Agree, we are going to do something about whatever is happening. But still, I think the only point what I feel would be most important to circumvent the development of this property is to prevent them from getting an exception. I think that's paramount. Because for no reason, the city cannot do that. And they have to sit here justify as to why they're giving an exception to a particular builder. Is it monetary reason? Is it because they know each other? Or is it because, where are our voices being held? What is the weightage? What are the metrics? I think that's very important. And one more last point is, assuming that the city is going to give us a clean and fair report on why an exception was granted or why it was not granted, it doesn't really make sense. And other thing I would really say, this is for WLB or one of the owners who is going to be, provided if they get an exception, they're going to use our community to go through and build it. We endured 2+ years or 3 years of construction equipment go in front of our house. Okay, do you want to endure that for another 3 to 4 more years? And they're saying that they don't care. They're going to just use it and not pay for it during construction. If it breaks, if the gate breaks, okay, let's say the gate doesn't break. What about the wear and tear to the hundreds and thousands of trucks coming in and opening and closing the gates? We are paying our HOA a lot of money to maintain our property values and our things. If the developers are not going to pay it till the HOA gets established, that's completely unfair. And what does the town think about it? So again, these are the two questions I want to ask. Thank you.
Sure, absolutely. So thank you for your question. So I'll start with the last one. So we do not, it's the agreement between the potential HOA, whoever that happens to be, whether that's Fairfield, of this property and the HOA for Sanctuary is an agreement between two private parties. So the town does not have a role in mediating that or enforcing that at all. What we do enforce is legal access to the property, and then the private agreement is it needs to be worked out between those two parties. So that answers that question, maybe not to your satisfaction, but I can at least tell you from the town's perspective, that's our view. Now, in terms of how much weight does communities' opinions on a grading exception weigh relative to the criteria, I suppose if you ask the 7 commissioners and the 7 council members, you'd probably get 7 different answers on that. So I am absolutely not going to try and speak for any of the council members on how much that weighs in, but I can assure you they take the public participation process very seriously. Being here in the meeting tonight, watching it down the road, without a doubt. So I assure you they're here to hear your voice as well and understand that there are some concerns about it. So looks like we've got one more online. Thomas, please go ahead whenever you're ready.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, I just have 2 follow-up questions if I could. It was stated that there was an exception given to Sanctuary at Silver Hawk, and it was kind of almost as if the gentleman was justifying the grading exception for this new development due to the road. What is the actual grading exception being requested for? Is it for the road, or is it for the lots, or is it for open-ended?
Mr. Grizzle?
So a portion of it is for the road that comes down into to serve lots 8, 9, 10, and 11. And so it's right in that area that is screened from all different directions. So we're having our grading guys get into this right now, and they figure out all the different elevations. I'm not an engineer, so I let them do that. But this is what I'm understanding, and that's what it is.
So the great
answer it.
So the grading exception is for a road.
Yes, and there might be a portion of it for a lot as well.
And so okay. We will require them to show us as part of their formal application what they're requesting the exception for. So that information will absolutely be available for the second neighborhood meeting.
Okay. And then my final question is, if the exception is rejected, what would be the next steps, like for the residents of Sanctuary? You know, what would we expect after that? Do they refile? Is it, what happens after that if it were to be rejected?
Sure. So if the grading exception, so the site plan you see on the screen before you requires the grading exception to be built as it is presented today. So if the grading exception is not approved, I guess I, as a staff member, would expect that at some point the property owner and maybe Fairfield would come back with a revised design that does not require a grading exception, which would then go through the commission and council approval process. But at that point, it's not a discretionary ask. If they meet all code requirements, the town would have to approve it. So the grading exception is needed because of the design that they're showing this evening. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you.
Okay, sure. So we got about time for one more question here in the room. Is there anybody who has not asked a question who would like to? Oh, we found him. The winner back here.
Yeah, hi. Has any consideration been given to a different access road that doesn't just completely change our community entirely? Or is it just being default answer is just go through Silverhawk?
Mr. Grizzle?
This is the legal access that is used for this site. There is no other access to this site.
Okay, so to answer the question, no. You're using the legal access that
Correct.
Exists today.
We're using the legal access that was provided for this parcel a long time ago.
Okay. Thank you. So we're going to go ahead and finish up just because it's coming up on 8 o'clock here. I want to finish my last two points. And then, of course, again, we'll be available afterwards if you have other questions that we can certainly get to. So moving forward, we'll get that formal submittal probably, I don't know, next 4 to 6 weeks, I would suspect, maybe sooner. And then we'll put that on ovprojects.com. So I encourage you to bookmark that or tab it or whatever you do on the device you may have so that you can stay attuned of that new information as it comes in. And then when we reach code conformance and code compliance, we will send out postcards again letting you know that we'll be meeting back in this room. So, again, if you didn't receive that postcard and you want to, make sure that you sign in. And then ultimately going to commission and town council as well that are opportunities for public involvement. So, with that, I encourage you, if you have other follow-up questions, thoughts, comments, or anything throughout this process, please contact Alex. She's serving as the town's project manager for this project, so she will get any answers that you need. If she doesn't have the answer, she'll make sure she forwards that on to folks who can provide that. And then we do have the project page up and running, so please go there to stay tuned in the project. And again, I would respectfully ask your participation in the survey to see if there are things that we can do better. Maybe we need less talking from me, more talking from you, something along those lines. So thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. You guys have a nice evening. Thank you.